A circle in a spiral, a wheel within a wheel, never ending or beginning, on an ever-spinning reel, as the images unwind, like the circles that you find in the windmills of your mind.
I was only 21. There was a lot of expectation. I was asking myself, can I deliver at this level? Everything I've achieved is rooted in that first moment. When you taste that victory, the hunger lives on. I feel honored to be part of Wimbledon's great history.
Well, that first Grand Slam title came on July the 6th, 2003. 14 years on, and there have been 17 more trophies for Roger Federer. The Swiss is among eight men to have won crowns at all four Grand Slam venues in Melbourne, Paris, London and New York. Federer is now 35 and he started the 2017 Wimbledon going for his eighth championship. Unusually for the Swiss maestro, he became embroiled in something of a controversy after his first round victory over Alexander Dolgopolov. The Ukrainian retired from their match after losing the first set and while trailing love 3 in the second set. The centre court crowd was happy their hero had won, but a bit upset that they were only allowed to ooze their love for him for less than 45 minutes.
So his explanation to me was that he felt too much pain on the serve, maybe on the jump. That's what he told me, and he's just like, it's getting worse. So at that point, obviously, when you're down set and a break and it's getting worse and he's in pain, you know, I see the point that if you feel like it's getting worse and you can hurt yourself even further, I mean, it is better to stop. The question is always, should they have started the match at all? And that only the player can answer, really, in my opinion. And you hope that they would give up their spot for somebody else, you know, even though they deserve to be in there.
There was a reason why the centre court spectators were feeling short-changed. About an hour earlier, Martin Klizan retired from his first round match against the second seed Novak Djokovic. Klizan was a set down and behind in the second set when he informed the umpire that his left calf couldn't take the pain anymore. Djokovic made light of the reverse.
Yeah, it's really odd that Roger's result and my result more or less was the same when it really happened. And we had a little joke about it in the locker room and saying that we should maybe play a practice set on the center court just to have crowds stay. But, you know, they had another match moving to center court, so it doesn't happen often, really. And I'm sure that the players that have retired as well, they, you know, this tournament has a very special place in many players' careers and just in the history of the sport. There's so much weight behind it and significance about, and the aura of Wimbledon has always been probably the strongest of any other tournament, you know. So I'm sure that most of the players on the tour, if not all, feel that, and especially if you walk out on the center court, there is a responsibility, you know. I'm sure they try their best, but you know, it is what it is.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talk.
For his 40-minute visit to the centre court, 28-year-old Klizan earned €39,813, or just under €1,000 a minute. Dolgopolov was on court against Federer for 43 minutes, so he earned just a tiny bit less than Klizan per minute.
Brand new money, making major moves, man, and a damn thing's funny. Pimpin' hood rats, the playboy bunnies, they see the...
The two were among seven men who couldn't finish their first round matches at Wimbledon. The fact that Klizan and Dolgopolov pulled out while playing on the most hallowed of show courts could help revolutionise the Grand Slam tournament, says Federer.
On the ATP level, we have a different sort of a situation. If you can play, you still get your prize money twice a year. So maybe the Grand Slams should maybe adopt some of that. No, a player should not go on court if he knows he won't finish. The question is, like, did they truly believe they were going to finish? You know, if they did, I think it's okay that they walk on court. But otherwise, I feel like they should give up the spot. The ATP has adjusted its rule, but maybe the Slams should maybe have a look at what they could do for the players to make it just a little bit easier, because like you said, it's a lot of money. So for some of them it's even more, for some it's less, it doesn't matter. For some they just want to be out there because they feel like miracles do happen. Maybe the other guy retires too, maybe the other guy is also carrying an injury. Maybe if I win and I have a day off, all these things play into the equation as well. Don't forget those things as well. It could be rain, come back the next day. You know, you never know what the players' motives are.
In the rules drawn up by the ATP, which organises the tournaments on the men's tour except for the Grand Slam events, the person who replaces the player who has withdrawn, what they call a lucky loser, gets the prize money if he advances. And the fans also see a full match. What's not to like? Djokovic says he's all for it.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. And I think that the new rule that ATP has reinforced this. Allows players who deserve already, who have made it to the main draw, to get what they deserve. But on the other hand, allows someone else to play if they cannot. So I support that kind of rule.
You're the town. You're Waldorf salad. You're the town. You're a Berlin ballad.
Last year, Djokovic entered Wimbledon as the world number one and defending champion. He had just won his fourth Grand Slam title on the trot at the French Open. This summer, he's world number four, his lowest ranking since October 2007. His seeding of number two at this year's Wimbledon reflects his success at the tournament, which he's won three times.
Well, I just think that the word defending already is kind of linked and connected to the emotions that are not the right ones. I don't relate to that word, defending something. I feel like, you know, even though you come as a formerly called the defending champion to a certain tournament, you still are starting from scratch and from the same starting line as all the other players. So I, you know, always try to have that mindset that I am fighting for the trophy as everyone else. And tennis as a sport allows you to have this opportunity over and over again, literally every other week. So even if you lose, you can still bounce back and, you know, make a good result in a few weeks' time. I think it's just really is very individual, you know, how player perceives life on the tennis tour and just in general terms, his goals, his ambition. Everybody has a different approach, I guess. So I have to only speak in my own name. And to me, it was always about, you know, enjoying what I do. And I was mentioning many times before that, you know, the source of my motivation to play the sport is love and passion for the sport. And as long as that's there, then everything else seems easier and more natural and just kind of blends in. I'd never try to play it for any different reasons, materialistic reasons, you know. Of course, as everyone else, I had my lifetime goals, and, you know, one of them was, of course, to try to become number one of the world. And when I reached that was, of course, very fulfilling. But it's not essential. It's not the most important thing that keeps me going every single day.
In the women's draw, only two of the players starting had won Wimbledon. Petra Kvitova, the 2011 and 2014 champion, departed in the second round, leaving only the five-time champion Venus Williams. It's been 15 years since she enjoyed her third stint as world number one. Federer was last top of the pile for 17 weeks between July and November in 2012. Now down to number five in the world, he says those halcyon days as big boss were a lot of fun.
Because it feels better to be number one than number five. So, I mean, I'm happy right now in the situation I find myself in. I'm healthy and I'm happy. And the times when I was world number one, it felt great. It's sort of achieving the impossible and showing up and everybody, you know, feels you're the favorite and everybody believes you should win or have to win. I don't know. I kind of enjoyed that part of playing. But then again, it's secondary to the love for the game I have, how much I love winning. Rankings, you know, get shoved a little bit aside for me at this time of this stage of my life.
18-time Grand Slam champion Roger Federer.
You're the top. You're the top.
Well, that's it from Sports Insight for this week. My thanks to producer Alain Bleu. From me, Paul Myers. Ciao.
You're the Louvre Museum. You're the melody from a symphony by Strauss. You're a Bendel bonnet, a Shakespeare sonnet. You're a Mickey Mouse. You're the Nile. You're the Tower of Pisa. You're the smile of the Mona Lisa. I'm a worthless check. Total wreck of flop, but if baby I'm the bottom, you're the top. You're the top. You're Mahatma Gandhi. You're the top. You're Napoleon Brandy. You're the purple light of a summer night in Spain. You're the National Gallery, you're Garbo Salary, you're a cellophane. You're sublime. You're a turkey dinner. You're the time of the Derby winner. I'm a toy balloon that's faded soon to pop. But if baby I'm a bottom, you're the top. You're the top. You're a Waldorf salad. You're the top. You're a Berlin ballad. You're the nimble tread of the feet of Fred Astaire. You're an O'Neill drama, you're Whistler's mama, you're a Camembert. You're a rose, you're Inferno's Dante. You're the nose on the great Durante. I'm a lazy lout who is just about to stop, but if baby